This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross. A fistful of dollars, for a few dollars more, the good, the bad, and the ugly, once upon a time in the West. The brutal West of Italian director Sergio Leone revived the genre, made a movie star of Clint Eastwood, created a visual style that influenced many film directors around the world, and introduced many of us to the film music of Ennio Morricone. Leone, who was born in 1929 and died in 1989, described himself as growing up in the cinema. Both his parents had worked in the movies. Leone's films in the 60s got little respect in their own time. They were disparagingly referred to as spaghetti westerns. In 2005, Terry spoke with Christopher Frayling, one of the world's leading experts on Sergio Leone. He's the chair of the Arts Council of England and rector at London's Royal College of Art. Last year, Frayling co-curated an exhibit called Once Upon a Time in Italy, The Westerns of Sergio Leone, at the Autry National Center's Museum of the American West in Los Angeles. He also wrote a companion book of the same name. In April, Frayling came out with a new book called Spaghetti Westerns, Cowboys and Europeans from Carl May to Sergio Leone. Let's start with a clip from A Fistful of Dollars, which features the tough guy character Clint Eastwood developed in Leone's movies.
Adios, amigo. Listen, stranger. Didn't you get the idea? We don't like to see bad boys like you in town. Go get your mule. You let him get away from you?
See, that's what I want to talk to you about. He's feeling real bad.
Huh?
My mule. You see, he got all riled up when you went and fired those shots at his feet.
Hey, you making some kind of joke?
No. You see, I understand you men were just playing around, but the muley just doesn't get it. Of course, if you were to all apologize. I don't think it's nice you laughing. You see, my mule don't like people laughing. It's the crazy idea you're laughing at him. Now, if you apologize like I know you're going to, I might convince him that you really didn't mean it.
Why did Sergio Leone love Westerns? Why did he want to make them in Italy?
Well, you've got to imagine a child growing up in 1930s Rome at a time when Mussolini was the dictator and when most American movies were banned and those that were seen were dubbed into Italian. And the young Leone first saw his Hollywood Western movies in the 1930s at that time, and his heroes were Gary Cooper and Clark Gable and films like Stagecoach. And to him, they represented an absolute model of freedom. He lived in suburban Rome in cramped conditions, and he saw these wide open spaces, this unimaginable desert that goes on forever. He saw these characters. He couldn't understand what they were saying. He couldn't. He never heard the. In fact, he never learned to speak English. Sergio Leone. That's what's so extraordinary. But they were dubbed into a different language, not very well. But nevertheless, they clicked in his mind. Then, in the 1950s, when he went into the film industry, he found that nobody was really very interested in the Western. A lot of Hollywood veteran directors went over to Italy to make epics, films like Ben-Hur and Helen of Troy and Quo Vadis, and Leone hung around these films. Sometimes he was the assistant director, and he talked to directors like Fred Zinnemann, who'd made High Noon, Robert Aldrich, who'd made The Last Sunset and Apache and films like that. And they all said to him, the Western's dead. It's finished. We don't make Westerns anymore. So basically, Leone made Westerns because Hollywood had stopped making them, and because in Europe, and particularly in Italy, there was this huge interest in the Western and a huge knowledge of it as well. So the whole thing starts in a kind of folk memory of American Westerns that went back to the 1930s. And it's partly political. But the other thing was that Leone felt that Westerns had got a bit talky. There was too much talking in them. He liked Westerns where Rin Tin Tin did all the thinking, you know. Old-fashioned Westerns where lots and lots of action and not too much talk. He didn't like psychology. You know, Freudian Westerns got on his nerves. Films like The Left-Handed Gun with Paul Newman, where, you know, you feel if there'd been a social worker around, Billy the Kid would never have happened. Films like that, he didn't like. He liked films where, you know, a lot of shooting, a lot of riding, a lot of action, a lot of landscape. So he wanted to bring back the kind of innocence of the Western. It had become too sophisticated.
Well, you know, but he knew he was making Westerns that were different from American ones. Like he said, and I think this was to you that he said this in your interview with him, that John Ford, the great director of Westerns, was full of optimism, whereas I, on the contrary, am full of pessimism.
Well, that's the thing. He loved the look of the Western and the idea of the Western and the fairy tale of the Western, but he didn't like some of the ideologies. He didn't like John Wayne very much. And some of the sort of crusading element of the Western that you got in 50s and early 60s Westerns. So loved the visuals, didn't like the ideology very much. So he takes the concept of the Western and makes it much, much more cynical. I mean, the hero, for example, when people ask him, why are you doing this for us? As someone actually asks in Fistful of Dollars, the first of his Westerns, why are you doing this for us? Instead of saying, you know, because a man's got to do what a man's got to do, or there's some things a man can't just ride around, things like that, that he says, $500? He works strictly for ready cash. So he has a very streetwise 1960s cash-only attitude to life. And this was a very different kind of hero, much more grown-up kind of hero to the old-fashioned crusading hero. And I think that the modern movie action hero begins with the Clint Eastwood character in A Fistful of Dollars, where you identify with the hero not because of what he believes in anymore, because he doesn't actually believe in anything. You identify with him because of his style, you know, the way he wears his clothes, the way he walks, the personal style of the man. And that, of course, is the basis of identification of all modern action heroes. And I think it begins with Clint Eastwood in A Fistful of Dollars.
Well, you know, in American Westerns, the good guys were usually, you know, relatively clean-looking and attractive in a movie star, you know, kind of way. In Leone movies, they're so violent. And everyone in it, you know, the bad guys and the guys who are relatively good guys, and nobody's exactly good guy in the American movie Western way, they're all, like, dirty, grizzled, and mean.
I know, it's true. It's true. And the production design, this sort of, the towns look very lived in. Leone couldn't bear those overlit towns you get in TV Westerns. There were a lot, of course, in the 1950s and early 60s, there were lots and lots of TV Westerns. In England, you know, every night on every channel, there was a different Western series. And they were all very well scrubbed and well lit, and they looked as though they were shot on a back lot in Hollywood. And Leone detested that look. He wanted to, you know, dirty it up a bit, make it more grungy. So the towns look lived in, and the hats are all grey hats. They're not black hats or white hats, they're grey hats. Lots of dust, lots of designer stubble. Everyone looks as though they haven't washed for 3 weeks. And actually, if you look at archive photos of the historical West, I think his look was closer historically to what it was actually like to those Hollywood movies of the 50s and 60s. You know, everyone looks very kind of dirty, and they have bad teeth, and they haven't shaved, and their skin isn't in very good condition. They didn't have access to healthcare. So in a funny way, he's doing quite a lot of historical research and looking at lots of archive photos. He had a vast collection of archive photos, and I've traced some of the visual influences and visual inspirations for his films in archive photos. So in a funny way, he's doing a lot of research, but it's kind of a well-researched dream, you could say. So he's creating a kind of dream world, a fairy tale world, but the surface of it looks very, very realistic.
Another convention that Leone breaks is, you know, you don't shoot children in cold blood in the great American Westerns. I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah, you certainly are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of Once Upon a Time in the West, the bad guys, and the lead bad guy is Henry Fonda, you know, Mr. American icon. The bad guys come in to this little deserted cabin in the desert, shoot up the whole family. One boy survives. And Henry Fonda looks at him, talks to him, and then shoots him in cold blood. And I don't think you would have seen that in an American movie, and you certainly wouldn't have seen Henry Fonda doing that.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, in American TV versions of Once Upon a Time in the West, that that moment was cut. American TV audiences weren't ready for Henry Fonda doing such a dreadful thing, it was assumed at that time. I mean, the whole thing was that Leone loved casting against type. You know, he imagined that the audience had a memory in their heads of every performance that Henry Fonda had given. Here's the man who'd played young Mr. Lincoln, Frank James, he'd played Wyatt Earp, he'd played one of John Ford's heroes. This was the all-American hero. Who better to cast as a psychopathic, child-killing gunslinger? And Leone's great story was that Henry Fonda arrived on the set with brown contact lenses to cover his bright blue eyes and a dark stubble, because he thought bad guys had stubble and brown eyes. And Leone said, "You're missing the point." Or he said through his interpreter, "You're missing the point, Hank. The whole point is you've got to have those translucent blue eyes, you've got to be clean-shaven, and you make your first appearance, and the camera's just behind you at shoulder level, and it comes round to see you as you come out of the bushes, and your cheek is puffed out with a wad of tobacco, and the camera comes round to show your face, and I want everybody in the audience to say, 'Jesus Christ, it's Henry Fonda.'" And that's exactly what happened. Everyone is the last person in the world you'd expect in that situation. So partly a cinematic thing's going on, partly because in a Western universe where everyone's bad, there are some people who are very, very bad. In a Leone's universe, if you do nasty things to children, you are very, very bad. So the way to show the really bad guy, where everyone's wearing a grey hat, is that something horrible like the massacre of a family. Actually, there's quite a traditional morality underneath that. It's just that he's ratcheted up the odds a little bit more.
Christopher Frayling, speaking with Terry Gross last year. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 2005 interview with Christopher Frayling, an expert on the Western films of Sergio Leone.
A lot of the Italian Westerns were had international casts. So you can almost see that in the faces. I mean, there's something very, like an ethnic variety of faces.
That's true. And very often it went with co-production. You know, Festival of Dollars is a co-production between West Germany, Spain, and Italy. So you have Italian actors, Spanish actors, West German actors. There were a whole series of West German Westerns made at the same time in the mid-1960s, where the Native Americans are all played by Yugoslavians, if you're following me.
Yeah.
So you can tell the Native Americans because they're Yugoslavian.
In America, they're all played by Jews, probably.
And, you know, you're quite right. There's this sort of ethnic mix. But I think, and in fact, in Once Upon a Time in the West, Claudio Cardinale, Italian, Charles Bronson, American, Henry Fonda, American, Gabriele Fazzetti, the man who plays the railroad baron, Italian, Frank Wolfe, an American actor who'd moved over after the blacklist of the early 50s to Rome and was making his living in the Italian film industry. It's quite a mix of actors. But I think it points to another thing, and that is that when these films came out, they were treated as ersatz American movies, you know, carbon copy westerns which were trying to ape Hollywood. I don't believe that. These are Italian movies. I think they're really best understood as part of Italian culture and European culture. They were originally made, well, Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More were originally made for the home audience. In the 1960s, Southern Italian audiences went to the cinema more often than any other audiences in the world outside America. Southern Italian audiences went to the cinema twice a week on average as adults. There was no television in Southern Italy in the mid-60s. So all the cultural references are for that audience. There's lots of references to Italian paintings, to Roman Catholicism. There are bells and churches and monks and cemeteries and crosses and angels and the interiors of churches and the whole iconography of Roman Catholicism. I think one difference between the Italian Western and the American Western is that in the end, the American Western is a Protestant genre based upon a Protestant view of the world in the 19th century, whereas the Italian Western is a Catholic genre, you know, at that fundamental level. Not in an upfront way, but that's just the visual references.
Well, you know, because the casts were international, you know, we hear Eastwood's real voice in America when we hear the American version, but a lot of the actors are dubbed in the early Leone films. And you can tell they're dubbed. They sound like the old Hercules movies where everybody's dubbed. so that undercuts things a little bit, you know, because the dubbing is just so bad.
Well, it's interesting. You know, every Italian movie of the 60s was dubbed. It partly arises from building their major studio on the flight path of Fiumicino Airport. So planes go over all the time. They just didn't have the convention of natural sound in Italy. Everything was post-synchronized. Fellini, Visconti, Antonioni, all these films. And so the dubbing is not unusual. I think in the early Leones, because they didn't have much of a budget, the dubbing isn't very good. But I think the sound design of these films does have a quality of its own. The gunshots sound like cannons, and the cannons sound like nuclear explosions. Everything's pumped up on the soundtrack. And Leone once said to me that sound is 40%, at least, of the experience of a film. And that was quite new in the 60s, too. So there are pluses to the dubbing as well as minuses.
Let's talk a little bit about the music in Sergio Leone's movies. And the music was done by Ennio Morricone. And the music from the Westerns is so, it's just so good. How did Morricone and Leone had vaguely known each other in elementary school. How did they hook up as adults?
Yes, they'd known each other in the 1930s. In fact, there's a famous school photo where they're standing almost next to each other, taken in the mid-30s. But when Leone was making A Fistful of Dollars, he had to choose a composer, and he rejected the composer that the producers had suggested and went to meet Morricone. He'd forgotten they were at school together. But they talked, and they concocted a kind of anti-Western score, you know, that whereas the traditional Hollywood Western had a very symphonic, rich score, school of Aaron Copland or Jerome Moros, you know, folk tunes reworked as symphonies. They wanted something that was much more hip, much more related to pop. So you get a Fender Stratocaster guitar, as used by the Beach Boys or the Shadows. You get whistling, which is associated with kind of solitude in the desert. You get a lot of Italian folk instruments, the maranzano or jew's harp, you know, doing, 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 and a thing called the argillophone, which is a ceramic instrument with holes in it, where you go, doo, that sort of thing. So it's Italian folk instruments plus rock music of the mid-1960s, and it was an astonishingly raucous, noisy sound, which became a huge bestseller as a soundtrack album, Fistful of Dollars. And it's nearer Tarantino than Aaron Copland, you know. It's kind of, it's like a pop music sampler. In fact, when I went to see Kill Bill, Part 1, Tarantino's movie, I thought he'd stolen my record collection. The soundtrack was absolutely those kind of thing. But it's raucous, it's of its moment, it's youthful, and it's not hooked into the classical tradition at all. And it works, it's also a lot of sense of humour. It punctuates the action in a very amusing way sometimes.
And on the soundtracks of the movies, in the actual movies, gunshots are used as if they're part of the score.
Yes. In fact, concrete sounds, you know, it was very trendy in the mid-1960s to experiment with music in the spirit of John Cage, the composer. And John Cage famously wrote a piece of music that consisted of silence. And the idea was the pianist would come in, sit down at his piano, and there'd be silence, and the sounds of the concert hall would become the concert. So the coughing and the rustling and the sweets being eaten in the bag and the shuffling of feet and the rustling of the program become the music. So all sound is music. This was a very fashionable idea in the mid-60s. And they picked up on this for the Italian Westerns. Morricone was very interested. In fact, he'd been to a seminar with John Cage in the late 50s. So gunshots and whip cracks and bells and choirs singing incomprehensible lyrics. Mm-hmm. I asked the choir master about the soundtrack of Fistful of Dollars. I said, what are you actually singing? You know, what is it? Is it Quick Get Back or We Must Fight? Or he said, I can't remember. It was just incomprehensible. They're just sounds, you know, and the human voice is used as another musical instrument rather than as a vocal line. So you get a lot of humming in these films. And it's interesting. It's sort of avant-garde music meets pop, and they're classic soundtracks, and they're a very important element in these films.
Christopher Frayling, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much.
Christopher Frayling, speaking with Terry Gross in 2005. He co-curated an exhibit on Sergio Leone last year.